The following program was pre-recorded. On WFAN, it's time for Hello, My Name is Craig, our weekly candid conversation about gambling addiction. Now, here's Craig Carton.
Good morning and welcome to another edition of Hello, My Name is Craig. Craig Carton with you for the next 30 minutes of frank, open, honest conversation about gambling addiction. As always, Dan Trelawer joining us. Danny, good morning. How are you?
I'm great, Craig. I'm great. Good morning. Happy Labor Day weekend.
Yes, for sure. And happy to have George from Pennsylvania joining us today as well. George, good morning, and thank you for spending a few moments with us on the fan.
Good morning, Craig and Dan. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be on with you guys this morning.
So we normally start off with me asking you a question, and that is, what was the date of your last wager?
The date of my last wager was November 29th of 2023, technically, but then I went to my first GA meeting like 10 days later. So I know there's some conversation of what the actual date is, but I think when you hear my story, you'll hear why November 29th is my last date.
Yeah, well, please feel free to share. When were you first exposed to gambling before it became an issue to you?
So my first exposure to gambling was probably as a kid. You know, it was not uncommon for there to be poker games, you know, during family events, whether it be holidays, birthdays, whatever. So it's always been around in the family. Nobody in my family really has ever suffered from, gambling problems. But again, it was prevalent. And then when I went off to college is when they opened one of our local casinos. So when I came back, for summer break or Christmas break or whatever, I went down, I checked it out, and of course had great fortune when I was doing it. You know, good luck those first couple times. And started going back. Again, thank God I wasn't around too long. It was only a couple weeks here and there, you know, between Christmas break and summer break or whatever. Right. And then I would go back up to college. But you could kind of see now looking back at it in retrospect that it was kind of a problem at that point. But then again, it died away up until right when COVID started.
So do you remember when you look back in your life with the clarity you have now, that when you would go back to school after, let's say, Christmas break, that you had some kind of feeling of missing gambling?
Yeah, there was definitely a sense of missing it. I think it was just ended up becoming part of filling my time while I was home. You know, in high school, younger than that, you're ready for for breaks to happen. But in college, breaks are longer than you ever think of, and you're ready to get back to your friends. So
sure.
I think it was filling some time, and it was something new in the area. At least it was literally down the street from my house.
And out of curiosity, when you first started going to the casino, before it became a problem, what was your game of choice when you went in and you had some success?
That was more just slot machines. That was all just slots. And I had some good success. Like I said, I think it's the only reason as a college student that I went back is because I had the success I did.
So, George, let me, I don't want to fast forward, obviously, through your whole story. But in the limited time we have, get me to a place where you're now gambling more than what's, quote unquote, normal.
You know, as I had told Dan and I have talked about prior to this, but part of my story is that I'm actually a priest. I'm currently suspended, but I speak with no authority of the priesthood right now, like I said, suspended, but it's part of my story. It's part of who I am and where this went. So when COVID hit, I remember ministry, I had a senior priest with me at the time who has since passed away, and that's also part of the story. But we were just stifled in how we could do parish ministry, how we could do life. And I remember right when COVID started, all those commercials were coming on TV. Hey, or even on the ads on the phone, hey, try out, you can't go to the casino, so try out the online. So, you know, I remember that internal conversation. I remember the internal conversation saying, don't do it, you know where this can go, but I dabbled. And of course, at the beginning, it was very little. The wagers were small, this and that.
Let me stop you there. You were already in the priesthood at that point?
Correct. I was. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
So you're a practicing minister, you're a priest.
Practicing. Yep.
And COVID hits, and now, like everyone else, you've got a lot of downtime, and you're looking to fill that time, and gambling becomes very prevalent. Go ahead.
Very prevalent. And it was the online. It was the online. Right. The online apps.
So for so, I guess for you, again, we're going to get to obviously the nitty gritty of the gambling. what an amazing, I would think, internal conflict, right? Because on one side, you've dedicated your life to religion and teaching religion. And on the other side, you've got, pardon me for saying this, kind of like the devil sitting on your shoulder trying to get you to go down a bad road.
Oh, yeah. And he got me good. I'm not going to lie. He got me good because that gambling addiction turned into gambling-based crime. You know, all my legal stuff is all in the, kind of in the past. Now I'm currently serving my sentence. But at the same time, it became such a problem that I started, unfortunately, to take funds from where I should not have. And so it was constant. It was a constant battle. It was remaining honorable and faithful to the priesthood, but then also on the other shoulder, having this pull that just continued to take me down. And like I said, early on, it was just a little bit here, a little bit there of the gambling. But as the debt became greater, as the bets became larger, the temptation became greater. And I crossed that line. I absolutely crossed that line.
So before you explain crossing the line, because it's important, I think, that we do a little bit of a step-by-step with you here. Prior to making decisions that, were criminal, give me an idea of what kind of gambling you're doing as best you can remember. And I'm talking about from a time commitment, how many days out of the week, what were you doing gambling-wise?
Yeah, well, especially when it was COVID and we were on lockdown, it was, it wasn't as serious as it was towards the end, but it was quite a bit of time. I mean, I lived in a one bedroom apartment at the time. And I remember the phone call from my mom. What are you doing today? Oh, I moved from the bedroom to the living room, or I ventured to the kitchen today. Like, it became a joke. But the crazy part about having the accessibility on the phone was that it was in my hand. It's in your hand, when you go in the shower, it's in your hand, in the bathroom, in bed, and when you're cooking. So it was a couple days a week early on. And then it became, it took off. I mean, it was hours upon hours, all night, all day. Any moment I was alone in my office, it grew to almost an insane, literally an insane level.
And then you make the unfortunate decision when you don't have enough money to continue to gamble to take other people's money.
Correct. Yep. And it was always with that intention of putting it back, needing it, putting it back. But of course, as we know, anybody who reads the combo book or anything, it becomes larger and larger. No win is ever big enough to repay anybody, whether it's what I did or if anybody borrows from their families, whatever. I mean, it just became this line that I crossed, and I regret. I mean, I unfortunately can't go back. I've spent the last 20 months, understanding and for most of those 20 months, hoping and wishing to go back, but you can't. It's not reality. This isn't a movie. It's reality. I made those decisions, but boy, did it. The bets became bigger. The amount taken became bigger, and it all came to a culmination of being arrested on November 29th, and that's of 2023, and that's why that date is important to me.
I hear that. Were you stealing from the congregation? Were you?
Yeah.
How did that go?
Oh, it just was. There was unfortunate, opportunity that I had that I probably shouldn't have had. Like I said, it was a little bit at the beginning, a little here, a little there. Oh, okay, I'll put that back. And there were many times that I did. But then as the debt became bigger in my own life, and after I had literally, squandered away everything that I had personally, investments, all that kind of stuff, it just became the only source. And it was always, again, it's not honorable to say this, but it always was the intention to pay it back. But at what point does it become too big for that to even be a reality? The toughest part was after the fact, after everything came to a head. I needed, to be honest with you, Craig and Dan, I needed to be caught. I absolutely needed to be caught in order to.
We talk about that a lot, where there's a sense, and I felt it. Dan, as you've expressed, you felt it. And George, hearing you say this, I think it's important, because for people that don't have a gambling problem, it's hard to understand this. There's this really strange, but I think very tangible moment of relief when the jig is up.
Yep.
Right, Dan?
Yeah, I would agree with that. George, hearing your story, it really does just, and this is why you and I have talked a bit, you know, it reminds me of how I always thought I was borrowing and I always had plans to pay it back. And then that's part of the justification. You know, you're saying I'm not a bad person. I'm a good person. You know, I would never do this. I know better. You know, I was involved in my church too at the time. And it was just, I couldn't wrap my head around that thought of what I was actually doing. And then when you finally are caught, it's simultaneous panic and then relief. But Craig, the one thing I've realized over time is the weight that was lifted off my shoulder and your shoulder and George's shoulder is now transferred to other people's shoulders who had no idea. And that's the part that is hard to wrestle with, is that's the relief we feel is now the burden that other people had no idea and they're smacked in the face with it.
Let me take a quick break on that. We'll continue on. This is Hello, My Name is Craig.
Back to more of Hello, My Name is Craig on The Fan with your host, Craig Carton.
Welcome back to Hello, My Name is Craig. We have George from Pennsylvania and Dan Schlauer, of course. George, we're in the middle of your amazing story as a priest who, with a gambling problem, who's now been suspended by the church. We'll get into that in a second. You know, for a lot of gamblers, there's that final night of gambling that, you know, we call it the bottom of the barrel kind of moment where the poop hits the fan, whether it's a spouse that catches you, a coworker that catches you, a knock on the door from the FBI or local police or whatever it might be, but that last wager where it all went south. And I'm wondering for you if you experienced something similar to that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. We, things had kind of been found out somewhat at the parish that I had been, you know, stealing from. And, you know, there were some meetings. There was a lot of question as to certain discrepancies, and it hadn't totally been found out, but I knew for maybe a couple months that it was coming to a head, and my life just became a mess. I couldn't stop gambling, of course, but then, you know, the mental, spiritual, physical hell I put myself in. I will tell you, this happened right after Thanksgiving. I remember going to Thanksgiving dinner at my parents' house, and I just remember the days I was in. I remember even those days ahead, like, what's going to happen? How is this going to culminate? How is this going to end? And it was, I put on a good mask. I put on a good facade for those last couple of weeks. But when it happened, when I got that, I had gone out to grab something to eat. And when I came back, there were some detectives in my hallway and they introduced themselves, and I have to give them a lot of credit. They were very kind to me and very polite. And you know, I knew it was there. It was done. Went in and, there was this awkward sense of relief. You know, you would think being handcuffed and taken to the precinct or whatever, to their offices, that I would have been losing my mind. I was just calm. I had this, I was breathing again. It was a very weird, weird balance and very weird emotion to have. I think there was a lot of shock, don't get me wrong. But there was this sense of relief, and I remember talking to my therapist about that at first, and she said it's not uncommon. It's not uncommon to feel that. But as Dan was saying before the break, that last day of gambling for me was the first day for everyone else. I was done. I was relieved, but boy, did that burden get put on a lot of other shoulders.
If it comes out public, you know, you've been arrested, local priest is arrested, et cetera.
Yep.
And now the people in the parish, you know, the congregation, you know, that becomes, you know, rumor mill central, right? Everyone's talking about it for sure. And the people that you have relationships with are now disappointed because they've kind of been burnt by you, I'm sure. They have that feeling.
Yep.
What was that like for you, having to pick up the phone or take phone calls from people in your life? Did any of them say, I knew you had a problem, I just didn't know what to do about it? Were people totally shocked by it?
I would say 90% of my life and the people in my life were shocked by it. There may have been a small group that I had gone to the casino with before. I had gone, you know, friends of mine. It was always social. It was always a birthday or this or that, just going out to dinner and then heading over to the casino or whatever. But, you know, those people kind of course, said, oh, yeah, we knew something was going on. But no, I would say the majority, the serious majority of my life did not know. And, you know, so I was released. I did not spend any time in jail. I was released that night to my parents. And the senior priest of the parish, who is a wonderful man, came to the precinct. He was there on my behalf, but also the parish, and really helped to help me not spend any nights in prison or any nights in jail. And I was released from my parents. So I got away from the community that I was serving. My phone was taken from me because they had it for evidence purposes. So my old phone number, everything. So there was a true disconnect from people within the community. But of course, my family, you know, I had to tell that just came out that night. It was on the news. So that's the one thing about being a public figure is when this happened, it hit the news. It definitely hit the news. And what became interesting is my life in GA and my life in recovery is so public in my world. But it was funny because at GA, my world was so anonymous to all of them. It wasn't until before my sentencing that I actually came clean to the whole group as to who I was and what was happening in my life. They knew part of my story. They knew I had a problem. So it was really almost the complete opposite of what other people experience within recovery program.
And what was the ultimate sentencing?
The ultimate sentencing, which happened actually this past February, is 5 years, like a couple months ago, 5 year probation with the first 12 months on electronic monitoring.
Got it. So you have an ankle bracelet on for the first year, and then 4 years after you're on probation.
Correct. Then, of course, with the system, you know, I didn't get the ankle bracelet until June, so I've only been on it 2 months. But, I have my windows to work, to go to church, to do certain things like that. It's been better than the alternative, let's put it that way.
You didn't have to do any prison time. And if you don't mind me asking, what's the restitution?
The restitution was $155,000, which has been fully paid. Okay. But now my restitution is to other people who help in that area.
You have people that stepped up for you financially. They've made sure the victims were paid back, and now you owe a bunch of people money. I got it.
Right. The church has been made whole financially, but there is a gap still in terms of restitution to the situation. You know, money has been paid, but I was a trusted leader, and now it's rebuilding those relationships. Now I will tell you, many people have offered forgiveness. So many people have reached out, whether they got my new number through social media, whatever. I've run in. I mean, it's been almost 2 years. I've run into people.
So here's my question. You know, as you were talking, that was something on my mind. You deal in forgiveness, right?
Yep.
And yet I'm sure it's very hard for some people to forgive you. And I wonder how have you dealt with that?
It is. And again, it's a difficult spiritual struggle, I think, for all of us, especially when someone close to us hurts us. I've always been a forgiving person. I've always just been that person who's been able to turn the page. However, and like I said, most people have forgiven me, but there is a group of people who haven't. And I can only ask for forgiveness, Craig and Dan. I can't demand it. You know, so that's been the difficulty. And, you know, it's funny because I get burdened so much by the people who haven't forgiven me, like my personal mind and my spiritual and my psyche and my spiritual life, that I have forgot. I think I have put aside some of the people who have forgiven me and who want to be with me. You know, it's a very interesting dynamic there, but it's been a challenge, and I work every day to try to mend those.
Well, I'll say this, and Dan,
some will never be the same.
I will say this, you know, that just because we wake up one day, and for whatever the reason is, whether it's being arrested or, you know, just deciding one day for whatever reason to stop gambling, that doesn't mean that we're given or guaranteed immediate forgiveness, because we hurt a lot of people along the way, whether that's in your position you were in as a trusted member of the church, or the position Dan was in or I was in. And the forgiveness part, that's, I think, a lifelong battle. And there are some people that will never come back into your life the way they were prior to whatever you did. I know I've experienced that. You know, one of the things, George, Dan and I have talked about a lot on this show is in our recoveries, and you know, Dan, where are you at, 12 years now, I think, right?
Oh, 15.
Pardon me, 15, and I'm into year 8. And you're now a full year into yours, George, which is great and amazing. So congratulations on that.
Thank you.
There comes a point, and this point is different for all of us, where we drop the shame that's involved with being an addict, with the bad decisions we made, with how we hurt people or whatever the case may be. And I wonder for you, if you're at that stage yet of your recovery where you've eliminated whatever shame was associated with kind of being outed as a gambling addict who also stole money.
So very interesting that you asked that question. I've had a lot of conversations about that lately. I'm still working on the shame. I know shame is toxic. I know it is something that just, you tell yourself with shame, you tell yourself, I'm not worthy. I'm not worthy of God's love. I'm not worthy of forgiveness. And for the kind of tying the two conversations that we're having, I haven't been able to forgive myself yet. And that's a struggle. So I totally can look in the other person's eye who's not willing to forgive me yet and say, I understand where you are because I'm not there yet. And I think for me, my shame is embedded in the whole concept of I brought scandal to the church. I brought scandal to the priesthood. It's not anymore because of the gambling or anymore. It's my shame is now embedded there in the spiritual life. I'm getting the help. I have a wonderful therapist. I go to my GA meetings religiously. My path towards recovery in the gambling world is often on a beautiful rocket and it's shooting upward. It's now kind of coming back to the other part of our conversation, which has been forgiveness, forgiving myself. And I will tell you, the week after I was arrested, I remember I called my spiritual father. It's another priest or bishop who is every person is supposed to have one in our faith, where it's someone you go to confession to, someone you build a relationship of pastoral care with. And I remember calling my spiritual father and said, okay, need to go to confession. And I just remember after confession, one of a few things that he said to me. First, he said, welcome back. And that was huge for me. Like, basically, you're forgiven. In the eyes of God, you came to him. You asked for forgiveness. Welcome back to reality. Welcome back to the world. Welcome back to your senses. But one of the things he said to me, he said, you know, George, what you're going to experience going forward is this. You're going to have 20% of the people in your life that are going to be behind you no matter what. You're going to have 20% of the people in your life that are going to never look at you the same. You're the thief. And then there's going to be the 60% in the middle that are just going to go on with life. And you're part of the story, how you, you know, react, how you recovery, that'll be part of that. But it's not going to be their prime focus and dwelling. And let me tell you, I have experienced exactly that. I've experienced the 20%, and the 20% in my life that have been 100% behind me, no matter what, are the people that showed up to my sentencing. There were over 60 people that showed up in the small courtroom to my sentencing, the people who wrote letters, the people who have visited me from day one, and even now, even while I'm on my house arrest, on my ankle monitor. And then there's the 20% of people who, let's put it this way, continually remind me of my weaknesses and what I've done. And then there's those people in the middle who I see weekly. I see them at church. I see them when I'm working, who just, okay, they've seen my recovery over the last year and a half, and was it awkward at first? Yeah, but things are more friendly now. And luckily, I had the blessing to go. So growing up in this area, there's many parishes, there's many Orthodox parishes. So even though I'm suspended, I have been able to go to church. I was given that. My home priest, my home parish welcomed me. They brought me in, and I'm one of their kids. I grew up there. That's been an interesting thing too, just watching that evolve. I mean, I didn't want to be out publicly for the longest time. And then slowly, I was going to church and then leaving immediately after. Now I go to coffee hour.
One final thing. It's interesting that you happen to be our guest today. And this is where the world works in mysterious ways, right? Literally, I'm driving home from dinner last night, and my wife asked me if I thought God had been good to me in my life.
Mm.
And it was an interesting question, because I've had my battles with that based on childhood trauma, and then obviously the things that I experienced from a gambling standpoint. And I thought about it for, 10, 15 seconds, 30 seconds. And my answer was, yeah, he has been. Mm-hmm. 'Cause he's given me, this second attempt at life, and I can get into it, more in depth another day with you guys if you want. And I'm wondering for you, now that you're in recovery, as a man of the cloth, what is your current relationship with your higher power?
I'm going to answer just like you did. God has been good to me. I ran away from God. Let's put it that way. I ran away from God. But you know what's interesting? I've turned around, and his hand's right there. Yep. He's not, you know, I feel like I've ran miles and hundreds of miles away, but he's right there. If God, listen, if I know a lot of people will blame God when things are bad and then praise him when things are good. Like we curse him when we were losing in gambling and then, oh, we won a lot. Hey, yay, thank you for those blessings. So for me, it's been turning back and seeing his hand right there ready to pull me out of that stormy sea. So that's been huge for me. But also, if God wasn't good to me, where would I be? Insanity, prison, or death? That's if God wasn't good to me, I wouldn't be here right now.
What I realized over time and in my recovery, and as I got reconnected, I never lost my salvation or my faith. I just lost the joy of it. And it's because gambling stole my joy. What I realized is that God's always good and that he uses everything for us, not against us or to hurt us. But everything we go through is for our good and it's for us. And sometimes we have to go through the stuff just to get a little bit closer to him or to realize how good he actually has been. So yeah, that's my answer too.
So many times when I was preaching, I knew I was preaching to myself. Not just to my parishioners or to whoever I had an opportunity to talk to. I was preaching to myself. And I remember one time, and I think this was God saying to me, you're going down the wrong path, George, wake up. I remember preaching and I remember there was this physical stench in my mouth as the words were coming out of my mouth. And that has sat with me to this day because I remember that. I remember it was almost like me being the hypocrite and God saying, hey, listen to your own words physically, not just on the door, but physically, George, you got to change. Unfortunately, it didn't wake me up but I've been able to look back at that in retrospect. So God is good. He's there and he's constantly knocking on that door, trying to get us back on the right path.
Appreciate your time very much. Absolutely. I'm proud of you. I'm glad you're in recovery. I'm glad you're rebuilding those relationships and hope to meet you one day in person, shake your hand and keep doing
Absolutely.
What you're doing.
I would love it.
And thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks, George.
I know we're up against it, Dan. Thank you so much for booking, George. And one of the things I think that's most powerful about that is you and I have talked a lot in the last 5 years about how gambling addiction doesn't care who you are, doesn't care how much money you got, doesn't care where you come from. And I always talk about it, the speeches I give. It's the teacher. It's the postman, the fireman, the cop, the lawyer, the EMT, the bagel store guy. And now it's a priest as well. And it's out there. It's real. And it doesn't care what you do with your life. If you allow it to invade your life, it will.
100%. And it just shows you, to your point, it doesn't matter what your journey is, what your profession is. You know, it's not about knowing better or being a person of faith. You know, we're all human. And, you know, we all struggle with different things. And oftentimes we struggle in the dark. And when it comes to the light, that's when we can start to kind of heal. And it was great having George on, and he's been doing a great job, and it's just a great story. Really enjoyed hearing his perspective today.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thank you all for letting us do this show. This is Hello, my name is Craig, and you are listening to Sports Radio 101.9, The Fan.